Hello, hello. I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. This is going to be a fun one, guys. The first of many with my new buddy, Sage Rosenfeld. Sage, what is up, man?
Matt, it's great to be talking with you, finally meet you. I've been following you on Twitter and reading some of your stuff for the last few years, and I'm happy we get to do a weekly show this fall.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. I mean, every Tuesday, I got Sage. Every Wednesday, like last year, I got Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus. Starting last Thursday, I got Sando every Thursday and from ESPN. And Monday, I'm doing a collection of Locked On folks from just around the league like we did yesterday. So things are really rolling. You know, a little bit of a format change on the podcast. I'm very excited about it. Sage is a former quarterback. We're going to talk a lot of quarterbacks going forward on Tuesdays. But can you just kind of lay out everyone, you know, your background, what you're doing, and I just want to let everyone know, too, we are brought to you by The Athletic.
Well, yeah, it's interesting you say that. That is one of my jobs. I write for The Athletic, mostly during the season. So basically, I'll probably write an article either this week or next is my okay. First one of the year, and that'll go all the way through the Super Bowl. So I started writing for them last year in October. Before that, I wrote for a website called The Score for about a year and a half. That was my first sort of real almost full-time writing gig, wrote an article or two for those guys for a while. So
I wrote two a week for them for 2.5 years after ESPN. So
yeah, well, there you go.
We're doing a lot of overlapping here, by the way.
To do overlapping. So yeah, I retired about 6 years ago, 12 years in the NFL for 5 different franchises. And,
very cool.
And I played my ball at college ball at Iowa State. I'm from a small town in Iowa, about 6,000 people. Grew up in the country, just a small town kid who played a lot of sports in high school, and football ended up being the one that sort of chose me, I think, more than I chose it. So got a scholarship, and next thing you know, I'm retired and I get to play in the media world a little bit with still get my kicks of enjoying talking about football, talking about quarterbacks, talking about the league, and obviously I say I enjoy writing. I do a lot of my work with the Vikings. They're the team I write and I cover the most and talk about the most. I do a radio show in Minneapolis Monday, Wednesday, Friday up there. I do a podcast up there as well with ESPN. And I go on the Paul Allen show all the time when I'm up there. He's the voice of the Vikings. And obviously I write for The Athletic, and that's mostly who I cover is the Minnesota Vikings. And so, yeah, I'm staying busy in retirement. I got to do something. Can't play golf in the wintertime. So I might as well talk about football, which I enjoy talking about.
Good stuff. And it sounds like I mentioned that we overlapped a little bit. We were at The Score together. We've done some Locked On things, obviously, we're going to be doing here. And even your playing days, you mentioned off the air, your final season at Iowa State, correct? You guys played Pitt in the bowl game. That was the year before I arrived at Pitt. That was Antonio Bryant, Kevin Barlow years. And I came the year after that and was there for 3 years.
Yeah, that's right. You know, my senior year, we made it to a bowl game. We had an 8-3 season, and we went to the Insight.com Bowl at the Bank One Ballpark, where the Diamondbacks play in Arizona. We played Pitt, and Paul Rhodes was their defensive coordinator, who had come from Iowa State, actually.
Right.
So we were playing against our old defensive coordinator, and later became the head coach, and that was a heck of a ball game. It was a great crowd. We had about 25,000 Iowa State fans there. Obviously, we had a little shorter distance to go than the Pitt fans. And we hadn't been to a bowl game in like 22 years. And so our fans are pretty excited to get there. It was a great game. And I tell you, Antonio Bryant was a great player. He had about 200 yards receiving in that ball game. Barlow was a heck of a running back. He and I played in the Senior Bowl together. I believe he was drafted about the third round.
Yep.
He was a very good player for the 49ers there for a couple of years. And so, yeah, it's football is a winding path. I think you and I can both say that. It's not just this is where, you know, what happens and this is the next step and this is the next step. You never know where you're going to end up. And especially the media stuff, there's no longer just very few, just one media role, type of personalities. You sort of do a little of this, you do a little of that, you do a podcast here, you write an article here, and you try to make a career out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I was very much in my formative years when I was at Pitt, and I learned an awful lot from Paul Rhodes. He was definitely one of the best coaches I had been around, really inspired the team, smart. I mean, I don't know how much interaction you have with him, so you're on the other side of the ball, but I was very, very impressed with Paul Rhodes.
Yeah, he was highly respected. And, you know, when I got to Iowa State in 96 as an 18-year-old high school, just out of high school, you know, he was like a 25, 26-year-old, you know, the youngest coach on the whole staff.
Makes sense, yeah.
That wasn't a student anymore, basically. And but you could tell right away he sort of, you know, he didn't command the respect of his players. He earned the respect of his players by the way he spoke to them and by the way that he was, you know, he made things black and white, which I think is really important in coaching. So players know exactly what they're getting themselves into and what they have to do and what's expected of them. And I had a lot of really good friends, still do to this day, that were, you know, DBs and safeties, you know, playing for him as a young coach. And they all say he was one of their favorite coaches their entire time in high school or college.
No, that doesn't surprise me. And Walt Harris was our head coach at Pitt, and Paul was the defense coordinator. And Walt would, like, address the team before the game, the pregame speech, all those things. And then Paul would take his defense into, like, the corner of the locker room and have his talk with them before they went storming onto the field. And it became pretty obvious that the offensive players would listen to Walt, and that'd be fine, and then they'd trickle over to the corner so they could hear Paul's speech, and they'd get really fired up.
Yeah, he knows how to get the blood flowing, that's for sure. Get your motor running. Most defensive coordinators, good defensive coordinators can do that.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And you mentioned you're doing work for The Athletic. I had mentioned last time that they are sponsoring the show now. The Locked On Network's growing very quickly. One of my friends, Mark Caboli, handles the Steelers. It sounds like you're doing Viking stuff. There's some new news. I don't know if you knew this, but they are having some national writers now. Jay Glazer, Dane Brugler, Lindsey Jones, Ross Tucker, a good friend of mine. I hosted a podcast with Ross at ESPN for many, many moons. So those guys are all being announced today on Tuesday to add to The Athletic team. And if you go to theathletic.com/lockedonNFL, you get 40% off your first year subscription. So it's only $2.99 a month. And it's a subscription-based publisher of smarter sports coverage for diehard fans. The Athletic's model is very simple. No ads, no pop-ups, no autoplay videos. Instead, readers subscribe to authentic, in-depth coverage written by journalists who know their teams inside and out. Coverage will go well beyond game recaps, trade speculation, and provide smarter analysis for deeper perspective. There's more than 650 new stories published every week across all their sports. Great writers, like I mentioned, some national guys now as well. So make sure you go to theathletic.com/lockedonNFL. All right, Sage, let's get back to business here. You were talked about, this is our first show together, so I just wanted to do a little bit of Viking talk, and I want to talk rookie quarterbacks to end the show. But I think all of us are pretty excited about the Viking season, and one of the best rosters in the league. I have two concerns with this team. Tell me if I'm off base or not, please. First one, I wrote up a State of the Vikings address a month or so ago and just broke down everywhere where they're at post-draft. And while I really like the group, I think the overall depth of the team isn't wonderful. I mean, there aren't many positions where I say, wow, they could really handle an injury or two there. And you can say that for a lot of teams, but if you're on a Super Bowl quest, you better be pretty deep. And my other bigger concern is the offensive line overall. And I know that they love drafting first-round corners, and that goes back to Zimmer with the Bengals. But I would have gone for a guy like Will Hernandez at the end of the first round. You know, it's more of a win-now move, you know, set the tone up front. And not only do I think they're lacking talent and guys they can count on the offensive line, but I really think that the death, and you would notice them much better than me, the tragic death of their offensive line coach not only has to weigh on them heavily, but he was a great offensive line coach, and he's not coaching them anymore.
I completely agree with you. And when the draft occurred, I was surprised that they didn't go with an O-lineman. And Will Hernandez is the guy that I had. You know, I'm not sitting there breaking down all the draft, you know, O-linemen in the group. Mostly quarterbacks is what I focus on. But, you know, I had heard that this was a big guy. He was a mauler. You know, he fit the type of O-line that, you know, Tony Sperano liked to coach. So he to me, seemed like the logical choice. But they didn't go that way. And as you said, they regularly do draft, you know, corners and corner safety types early. you know, in that Zimmer defense. He loves drafting those guys. He's a great developer of those players too. So they rarely sort of miss when Zimmer drafts them, because he's such a good coach at that position. So they, it's an issue, you know, early on already in training camp. Nick Easton, who is their starting, I believe, right guard, he's already out for the year. He had a neck surgery, hopefully not career ending. They've had some injuries so far. As you said, Tony Sperano, a really good O-line coach. He had been there 2 years. First year, they really struggled. Last year, they had two guys in free agency. They spent some money. They drafted a kid in the third round to play center, and their O-line was very good last year. They ran the ball well. They gave great protection to Case Keenum. They were also generally in the lead and playing, you know, from the lead, which is you can be, you know, a little bit more aggressive in the running game. You can call three-step drops because you're up by 10 on third and 10. If you don't get a first down, you just punt because you got this good defense. I am very concerned about this offensive line. They went out and they spent a ton of money on Kirk Cousins. I think that was the right thing to do. They wanted to get the best quarterback available. He was the best quarterback available. But no matter how good Kirk Cousins is, he won't be as good as he can be if they can't run the football well, and then if they can't pass protect, you know, in the passing game. So it's a very big concern. I think it's the hands down probably 1, 2, and 3 the biggest concerns about that team. Now people have concerns about the DB position, or this team doesn't have a great pass rusher, or this team doesn't, but the O line is not something that you can really afford to be too concerned about, you know, before the season even starts. Because to me, your O-line makes your defense better. Your O-line makes your quarterback better, makes your receivers better. And when those guys are struggling or those guys are thin, they start getting injured, you can see a team and an offense go downhill fast if you don't have the right players behind them to be ready to step in and contribute.
And other than quarterback, to me, it's the hardest place to develop players, hardest place to pick somebody up off waivers or a trade. Like, I fear that they're pretty much stuck with what they got.
Yeah, and on top of it, and what you said, you know, Coach Sperano, I believe, was a very good O-line coach, well-respected. You know, an O-line coach is, you know, a quarterback's coach is really coaching one guy, all right? D-line coaches are coaching four guys, but they're not really to work in unison. You know, there might be some twist games here, this, that, and the other, but, you know, offensive line, you're coaching five guys to be perfect, perfect footwork, perfect hand placement, the working X's and O's, working as one.
Yeah.
It's a very, very hard, I believe it's the hardest position to coach. And now that voice is no longer there, sort of the man that was the glue that drove that whole thing. Much less the fact that, from everything I heard, Tony Sperano was a very creative O-line coach, and as far as run schemes, he'd come up with some really nifty run schemes, you know, on Mondays and Tuesdays for when practice came back on Wednesdays. And so that is a major, major concern. And, you know, you can't just go out in July and find a really good O-line coach. You know, the good ones are they're all working. They all have good jobs. And so, you know, the coach that they had replaced him, hopefully does a good job. But yeah, there's a major concern there from a coaching aspect. And there's a major concern there, obviously, from the players being healthy, because they already have one guy out, and just the depth, because it doesn't seem like they have a lot of depth at that position. And as I said, you know, they ran the ball well last year. They were usually in the lead. That's a sort of an O-lineman's dream.
Sure.
If they're behind this year and they have to throw the ball 45 times, that could be what the Vikings had 2 years ago, which is basically a lot of three-step drops for Sam Bradford, a lot of quick screens, get the ball out, don't hold the ball in the pocket. Because if he was taking a lot of deeper drops 2 years ago, they would have, he wouldn't have lasted, you know, as many games as he did, Sam Bradford, in 2016.
And I absolutely understand why they went out and got Kirk Cousins, but we saw this more last year with him. The Redskins' offensive line was destroyed by injuries. I mean, it was almost comical. And I think people can easily forget that Cousins' history turns the ball over a lot. You know, I mean, especially when, you know, dealing with too much, or, you know, has to do too much on his shoulders. And that's my worry here, is if the line is deteriorating and he's under a lot of pressure, is he going to force a lot of throws that he shouldn't?
Yeah, and that's I agree with you there. You and I have sort of both the same critique of Kirk Cousins. You know, when he's asked to just execute, he does a really good job. He might be about as good as there is in the league of, you know, going through his reads and executing. But when things break down, or they're behind by a touchdown in the fourth, you know, Kirk, when he tries to do too much or he's asked to do too much, sometimes he comes through and other times he turns the ball over. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes the scariest thing about Kirk Cousins is when he's out of the pocket, you're trying to make a play in the red zone. He's thrown a lot of picks in those situations. And so, yeah, that's a big concern. This is one of the reasons I am not as positive about the Vikings as most other people. A lot of people, you know, Super Bowl caliber team, you know, NFC Championship caliber team. They won 13 games last year. People think they upgraded their roster by adding, you know, a better quarterback. But you got to realize, one, they've lost an O-line, and they lost their O-line coach. But also Aaron Rodgers didn't play, you know, for 1.5, you know, most of the season last year. So they really didn't have as much competition in the NFC North as they had in the past. And so they just sort of steamrolled through the thing. Well, I don't think it's going to be easy. I think the Bears are better. I think Nagy's going to be a good coach for them. I think they're going to be better, more competitive. Obviously, I think the Lions are a good team. They're probably an 8-10 win, you know, team. And so I can see them winning 9-10 games and maybe even missing the playoffs. And they, I still think, have a better quarterback. But I think, you know, that this might be one of those seasons where the ball doesn't bounce their way as it did in almost every situation last year.
Yeah, and the NFC is just nasty, too. I mean, if the Green Bay wins a division, you know, 9 or 10 wins might not even get you a wild card. You never know. I mean, the NFC is really, really tough, stacked with good teams. One other quick note. And Keenum, I thought Keenum played really well last year. I mean, I would rather have Cousins than Keenum. So would they. I understand that. But I don't know that you're guaranteed an upgrade from the 2017 Keenum to 2018 Cousins.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cousins is a better player. In the first preseason game, and I watched them both. There's an arm strength difference there, and I think there's an accuracy, difference there as well. Though I'll tell you what, Case Keenum had an extremely quick release. People mm-hmm. don't discuss that with him. He and I think Teddy Bridgewater is pretty good when he was healthy as well as a Viking. Those guys both made that O-line look better than it was in different ways the last few years. They get them out of trouble. It might just be an incompletion on the stat sheet, but it's not a 7-yard sack. Keenum does a great job of that. Super, really one of the quicker releases in the league. You know, I'd say Aaron Rodgers and Jimmy Garoppolo, and Case Keenum is up there. Extremely quick release. You know, he has a little gunslinger in him. Going back to his college days, he has a sort of a playmaker ability in him, and good at sort of executing the base offense, but not great. But guy really had the ability to buy time and be a little bit more creative than people gave him credit for. And I believe that might be an issue where he is better than what Kirk Cousins is. But if you talk about guys straight from the pocket, strong arm, making the big throws, you know, Cousins definitely has that ability that Keenum does not have.
Agreed. Obviously, a lot of people that listen to our show are big fantasy people. What's your thoughts on Dalvin Cook? I love the player, but just from a fantasy perspective, I wonder how much Murray might eat into his touches. I'm not the Murray believer. I am very much a Cook believer. But people always ask me about fantasy, and I think Cook might be better in real life than he is, you know, scoring touchdowns on the goal line or Murray coming in and stealing touches from him.
Yes, you know, I think with Murray is they use Murray a lot as a third down and short guy, you know, goal line type mm-hmm. stuff. He is sort of their bruiser of the two backs, and he had a couple of really good games last year, reeled off a couple long, you know, 40-50 yard runs, which was sort of surprising. Broke some tackles, but you know, so he'll get some touches this year for sure. Obviously, Cook coming off of his injury. But again, we go back to who's blocking for those guys. And that, to me, you know, a running back is only as good as his O-line. And unless, you know, they're sort of a once-in-a-lifetime talented back and they can just sort of make something out of nothing. But, you know, how good is that offensive line creating those holes for those guys? Because if they are worse than they were last year, I would not be trying to draft a Vikings running back. because of the offensive line scenario.
All right, Sage, I wanted to finish up with just an overview in your opinion of this rookie class of quarterbacks. Five of them were drafted in the first round. We've now seen Mayfield, Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Jackson have all played two games. Jackson's actually played a third, going back to the Hall of Fame game, and he played last night. Did you have a favorite coming in, you know, after the draft, or, you know, and do you have your opinions on any of these guys changed at all, or what do you think of this crew?
So far, they all look like they're going to be NFL quarterbacks. You know, Lamar Jackson's probably the of all of them is the one that you sort of scratch your head and you go, well, I'm not sure yet. Yeah. But the other, you know, the other four guys, they legitimately look like they're going to be, you know, longtime players in the league, 10, 12 years. You know, at the worst, do a couple of them end up not being good starters and just sort of being guys in the league for the next 10 years? Yeah. But, you know, so far, so good. You know, it's, I tell you what.
It's pretty impressive overall.
It's been very impressive. It's very hard to go from college to the pros. I was just trying to execute, go through my reads. I was extremely nervous my rookie year. You know, just trying to get some of the snaps sometimes from the center. And you know, the challenges that I faced. And I watched these guys play. They look loose. They look aggressive. They're making some big throws. You know, they're making some mistakes, too. But you see a lot of good stuff on tape by all these guys. It's way too early to say who's going to be the best and who's going to be the worst. And, you know, there's all these, you know, Josh Allen has the biggest upside. I mean, I think that's the easiest way to say it. You know, sure. His ceiling is the tallest. You do see the huge arm. You do see athletic ability, which usually those don't go hand in hand. Huge arm and a guy that can buy time and create a little bit. So he is one of those guys. He's also probably the most raw of the group, right? So it's sort of a double-edged sword there. Baker Mayfield has been extremely impressive. I love the way he throws and the way his footwork is from a, you know, I like it when quarterbacks can throw the ball from what I say their right side, in the sense of they keep their right side planted sort of in the ground, almost like a baseball player swinging a baseball bat. And he can create a lot of velocity by staying back and what I say throwing from a phone booth, throwing from a really small spot. Baker does a great job of that. Josh Allen or Josh Rosen also has impressed me very much by the way he has played. Though that O-line, the number two O-line in Arizona, looks absolutely terrible.
Did you watch his first game? It was like he was playing shortstop, you know, just fielding grounders. Yeah, it was bad.
Fielding grounders back there and then not having much time. So he obviously can throw it. They have very natural throwing motions. You know, you follow these guys. You all follow the quarterback position. Everyone loves to talk about quarterbacks. I think in about 2016, people were talking about how this 2018 class could be really good. Well, I think they are pretty good. So, and Sam Darnold, I think he looks very good too. So I think so far, so good for those guys, which is, everything is sort of holding true. This is a good class. We don't know how things are going to pan out, but a lot of times quarterbacks, it takes 2, 3, 4 years. And, you know, 4 years ago, okay, this guy ended up being Christian Ponder and this guy ended up being, Peyton Manning. I guess we'll see in the next 4 years.
Yeah. And from what I've seen, again, I don't like to overreact to preseason, small sample size. What sort of defenses are they facing? Is anyone game planning against them? But I really think Darnold and Mayfield have looked the most natural, you know, that they clearly belong. This doesn't look too big for them. Calm helmets, calm feet. You mentioned Mayfield's footwork. I think that's very impressive. I was the lowest on Allen of the group, but the more I watch him, the more I warm up to him. I mean, like, I never think he's going to be Drew Brees' accuracy, but boy, that arm strength is tantalizing. I don't like to get too excited about that, but he makes plays every time I watch him too, and he's going to be a Mahomes roller coaster, but I mean, I like him more now than I did coming out of school.
Yeah, him and Mahomes are very similar. You know, big, talented guys. If you look at quarterbacks, I look at really two things: decision making and accuracy. Right? I mean, does it help to have a really big arm? Sure.
You're right.
Alex Smith is a good quarterback. He does not have a good arm. Drew Brees is a Hall of Fame quarterback. Does not have a big arm, but they make great decisions. And they're accurate.
Those are my two concerns about Allen. That's why he was my last guy.
And those are the two concerns about Allen.
Yeah.
You know, the You know, Alan is the prettiest girl in the room at the high school dance, right?
By far.
Doesn't mean that's the one that you want to date and get married to forever. Though,
right.
She's the prettiest one in the room, right? There's some risk there. By just
but she's
being
hard
blown
not
away.
To talk to at the bar.
She's hard not to talk to. You got to give her a chance. <you know? laughs> But yeah, so decision making and accuracy. The concern with Alan has been this accuracy discussion, which he's looked pretty accurate so far in the preseason. He hasn't just missed wide open guys all that much. And shoot, again, they're rookies. They're going to miss guys. I mean, I think that when you take it all consideration, but decision making. You know, sometimes when you have the big arm, you make bad decisions because you think you can make every throw because they've always had the ability to make every throw. They could make every throw in high school. You know, the college defenses aren't as good. They're not as smart. You can fit balls into smaller windows. These pro guys on the other side of the ball, on the defense side of the ball, they are faster, they're stronger, they're longer, and they're much, much smarter, believe it or not. They understand concepts of what coverages they're in, what offensive teams are trying to do against those coverages and the concepts, and they read how those concepts play out in the flow of defense. And so it's really harder to, just because you have that big arm, to fit balls in the small windows. You think you can, but that's where, again, decision-making and accuracy is all the more important.
I often equate those guys to the defensive tackles that never really had to work hard. I mean, like, that's one position where there's a couple freaks that come out of high school every year. They always go to the big schools. They even don't have to work on their technique and be elite players in high school for sure, in college. You know, they come to the league, and they've always been just more gifted than everybody. That I don't blame them. It's not like, hey, you're lazy, but they never had to refine their technique and get better in those situations.
Well, when you're 6'6", 340 pounds, and you can move, and you can run, and you can hold the point, and you can rush the passer a little bit, you know, you can do nothing in practice. I don't care if you're at Ohio State or Michigan or Alabama or whatever. I mean, they need you. You know, they need you on game day. So at the end of the day, it's, you know, don't give it to us in practice. We need you in the game because we don't have another 6'6", 340-pound guy who can do all the things you can do. So, yeah, sometimes they can sort of slide by without having given maximum effort, you know, all the time. But when you get in the league, the dollars are on the line. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other really good players out there. You know, everyone's game, you know, increases. And you know, if you give maximum effort and you have that natural talent, you could be a $10 to $12 million a year guy. But if you're lazy, you might be a guy who just is barely in the league. So you can very easily see those big dollars and cents differences. And you see the vast majority of guys in the NFL going hard all the time.
Last thing I want to bring up about the rookie quarterbacks, I'll let you go, and we'll talk again next week. Lamar Jackson was the guy I was really smitten with, and you sort of mentioned it. I mean, through three games, I hate how he's throwing the ball. I mean, like, he looks overwhelmed. He looks like he's lacking confidence. And for those that didn't watch him, he was a much better passer of the football in college than people, you know, assumed or that you're seeing now. I hope it comes around, but I don't like what I've seen.
Yeah, and that was I agree with you. When I was watching him at Louisville, people would say, you know, he's an unbelievable athlete,
sure,
unbelievable runner. You know, really, really hadn't seen a runner like that probably since Michael Vick in the college ranks from a quarterback perspective. But his throwing was pretty good. I mean, I watched a lot of throws, and like, man, he makes a lot of throws. He'd do a great job in the pocket. You could tell he was trying to stay in the pocket and go through his reads, and it seemed like he was doing a pretty good job of that. There is something different about throwing in NFL football. There just is. There is a transition of how the ball feels in your hand and how it comes out.
It's a lot bigger and heavier than people realize.
I think so. It's definitely heavier. It feels like it than a college ball. So what's a different – it's a little bit different. And when I saw Lamar Jackson throwing, I think it was whether it was at the combine or maybe it was his private workouts, I was watching some video. And by the way he was throwing, he did not look comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, despite the fact that he did all those amazing things in college and all those impressive stats and highlights and actually fairly high completion percentage and looked like a fairly accurate passer in college, I was concerned that he was not going to be a good enough thrower. From what I saw, again, just from those short videos as an NFL quarterback, because I don't care how fast you are, I don't care how strong your arm is, I don't care how tall you are, any of those things, if you're not accurate, you're not going to be an NFL quarterback.
No, you're 100% right. Well, you were an NFL quarterback for quite some time. I can't wait to talk to you every week. This was a total blast. Thanks again, man.
Hey, thanks, and looking forward to our Tuesday show.
Absolutely.